And so once I figured out my why, and that the why was not focused on me, but it was focused on the world, then I gave up this idea of, hey, I'm looking for fame and fortune and spotlight and all those things. And interestingly enough, that's exactly what Human Search Engine, the job search research project that I created, does for people, help you figure out where, you know, where do you spend time naturally? Where do you spend time when you lose track of time, and what things come naturally to you, and then teach people how to find work that fits in those areas.
You are listening to Fingerprints on Success, the podcast dedicated to highlighting unique imprints left by business leaders, mentors, and successful entrepreneurs. In this show, we'll be bringing on a diverse range of serial entrepreneurs, professionals, leaders, and coaches to uncover the secrets behind achieving success both professionally and personally. Guiding you on this podcast is none other than Bill Barrett, an award-winning corporate and business law attorney and CEO of the law firm Mandelbaum Barrett PC, where he and his team have provided a full array of legal services to both businesses and individuals throughout the country. Get ready and let's get to the show.
Chris Zarnik is not your average HR expert. He's a visionary who has revolutionized the hiring and employee development landscape. With a background as a former military officer, Chris embarked on a mission to redefine job search methodologies, leading to the creation of the Human Search Engine. This groundbreaking approach was embraced by the United States Congress as a national standard. But Chris didn't stop there. Recognizing the changing dynamics of the workforce, he redefined talent acquisition to reduce turnover rates. His best-selling book, Winning the War on Talent, has become a manifesto for change, guiding over 3,500 companies and organizations nationwide. Today, as organizations face unprecedented challenges in hiring and retaining top talent, Chris's role has evolved into that of a strategic coach. He's an innovator and a trusted advisor to organizations that he counsels. Through customized solutions, he empowers CEOs, leaders, and organizations to create environments where talent thrives and business objectives are exceeded. As a subject matter expert and top speaker for Vistage, the world's largest CEO coaching network, Chris's mission is clear: to equip organizations with the tools and insights to win their own wars for talent. In a time of constant change, Chris's expertise reinvents how organizations perceive and nurture their most valuable asset, their people. So let's unravel the fingerprints on success of Chris Zarnik. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show, Fingerprints on Success. And I'm here with Chris Zarnik. Chris is an entrepreneur. He's an author of the book, The War on Talent. And I'd like to also mention that how I came to know Chris was I was attending a national conference, and there was going to be a huge segment at this conference on how to retain talent and how to get talent, first of all, and then how to retain talent. And even though it was in a it was a conference that's outside of my profession, I found the subject matter so interesting that I sat for the whole 3 hours and was really just like blown away by Chris's presentation, so much so that full disclosure, we engaged him to come and do some services and help our law firm, which was a huge success. So Chris, first of all, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. And more importantly, our conversation started almost a year ago. And I could see immediately the connection, not only between the two of us, but also for the topic and how it affected your organization and maybe the organization of many organizations that you guys interacted with on a daily basis. So I'm grateful to be here.
Thank you. And you know, I think that for our listeners, which are, you know, we're basically driven by the community of entrepreneurs and business owners, constantly both in counseling those entrepreneurs and in talking to people that have been guests on our show, people regularly talk about biggest challenges that they have, and getting great people and retaining great people comes up over and over. So there's a whole bunch of reasons why I brought you on the show. Part of which is all learning about your entrepreneurial journey yourself and building your own successful business and enterprise. But also, you know, helping our entrepreneurs and glean some insight from your experience. So Give us a little, you know, for our audience, for the people who don't know you, tell us a little bit about you and what you do and how you got into it.
Yeah. So again, happy to be here. My name is Chris Czarnik, and I have actually spent the last 20 years figuring out why people go to and leave organizations. It's been my life's work for a couple of decades. And in fact, before I ever helped companies find talent, I spent 17 years teaching talent to find you. In fact, I was one of the best known career coaches in the country between 2002 and 2017 or 18. And I've been involved in some number of about 10,000 job searches in my life. So as one CEO said on the Vistage Tour, if you're fishing for talent, Chris just spent 17 years with the fish. And I will tell you that the interesting thing about that work is it all came from the fact that I never had a class or any kind of preparation in my life, high school, college, any of my work, to help me figure out where to go to work and how to find it. And so as a person who grew up in manufacturing and as a process manager, I decided to create a process that was essentially a research project on yourself and where you belong in the world of work and how to find it. And in addition to that, you know, you think about how important it is to find the right job or the right career. Well, you would never buy a house without research. You would never buy a car without research. And yet most people in the United States find their job by sending a resume to a person they've never met at a company they've never heard of for a job they've never done. And so my process, Human Search Engine, which I created, was actually identified by the 113th United States Congress as a national job search model. And in 2016, it was adopted by Congress as a form of outplacement or a tool in outplacement for members of Congress and their staff when they decide, when they get voted out of office and leave Congress. And so just it's really important that people to understand that none of this is theory. It's all based on what I learned from those 10,000 job seekers. And now I'm teaching you how to connect with them, because there are great people out there, but most of them are not in the job they want. They're in the job they could get. And none of them had a class anytime in high school, college, or even in their master's program, if they went that far, to help them figure out where they belong and how to find it. So it didn't exist, so I built it.
And Chris, you know, you've built a successful company. You're nationwide in scope, and you have clients all over the country. And when you think back on your personal entrepreneurial journey of success, were there certain guiding principles or philosophies that you had that you think have been a major contributor to the success you've enjoyed as an entrepreneur yourself?
Yeah, I think the answer was, I grew up in a small city outside of Appleton, Wisconsin, a tiny place. I grew up in a family of 10, very humble beginnings. And so once I realized that the goal was not money, the goal was making a difference in the world. And the fact that to recognize that I had been a speaker, a teacher, a trainer in every part of my life that I really enjoyed, whether it was debate in high school, whether it was delivering a sermon at the church as a guest speaker, whether it was counseling my own children, I realized that where I could provide the most value to people and the world as a whole was to gather and transfer information as widely as I could. And so I think, to be perfectly honest with you, the moment I realized that my life was not about me, that's the moment where I realized that on this entrepreneurial journey, for all of us, any knowledge we gain, I mean, I'm 62 years old now, right? So any knowledge that I've gained in these 62 years that I don't actively give away and teach to other people is wasted, right? If somebody has to relearn it. And so that's what's driven me. And more importantly, this idea that when the light goes on in people's eyes, and they realize that they actually have a choice where they go to work, they have control over it, and they can figure out how to put a square peg in a square hole. Since I came to that conclusion, life has been pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I think, you know, what you're really describing, I think, is purposeful work, right?
Right.
That you found purpose in what you're doing. And it's interesting how that is a common thread among a lot of entrepreneurs that have reached great success, is that, you know, they feel a sense of purpose in what they do, or for the people that they, you know, that make their living working for their companies. So it's kind of interesting when you tell that story about when you realized it wasn't about you, that was a big turning point for you.
I always think about Simon Sinek, right? Whose claim, main or first claim to fame was, what's your why, right? And so
Which spoiler alert, I'm going to ask you later.
And so once I figured out my why, and that the why was not focused on me, but it was focused on the world, then I gave up this idea of, hey, I'm looking for fame and fortune and spotlight and all those things. And interestingly enough, that's exactly what Human Search Engine, the job search research project that I created, does for people, help you figure out where do you spend time naturally? Where do you spend time when you lose track of time, and what things come naturally to you, and then teach people how to find work that fits in those areas.
The contrary is also always a great question to ask, which is, now when you reflect upon a successful journey, you can remember the moment when it started going in the right direction for you. When you look back, what are some maybe pitfalls or kind of things where if Chris today could tell Chris from X amount of years ago, here's what I wouldn't do. What are some of those things?
Yeah, so this is going to sound a little bit odd probably, but I was a pretty smart kid, right? Senior class president, salutatorian of my class, and I had all the opportunity and advantage. But what I didn't realize is I was very good as long as somebody was telling me exactly what to do, like where to go, what books to read, how to take a test, what to focus on. And then at 18 years old, we take that same kid that we've told exactly what to do since they were five, and we push them out the door and say, okay, now go do something great. And to be perfectly honest with you, right out of high school, I ended up in a paper mill. I was sweeping the floor in a paper. My first job was sweeping the floor in a paper mill, even though I had won the state debate tournament with a number of other of my friends, and speaking and training had always been the place where I was successful. I really thought somebody was going to tell me what I was supposed to do. I know that sounds odd today, but I was kind of waiting for my parents or a teacher or even a letter to come in the mail that said, hey, you should go to this school, or you should go to this trade school, or you should go to work in this area. And so I did a lot of things because I thought other people wanted me to do. And for example, I'm a former military officer, not because the military was a great fit for me, but my dad was a military officer. My brother and I went to boot camp together and officer candidate school together. But I went there not because I wanted it or I liked it, but I thought my dad and my brother wanted me to do it. And so one of the first things you have to realize if you're looking at your own teenagers is to realize that, like, if you taught them your whole life to do what they're told to do, and then you just take that away and say, okay, we've given you no tools and no opportunity to figure it out, just go do something great. I mean, we're just hanging people out to dry, to be perfectly honest with you. And so, and the last thing, I'll just say this one more time. It was really the moment where I realized that money couldn't solve this problem, this kind of yearning I had in me for significance. And in fact, many of the clients that I worked with as job seekers, they had money, they had position, but they didn't have purpose or significance. And that's why they came to me to help them find that. So, if there's not a process to figure it out, of course people are going to get it wrong. And so that's why I've spent the last couple of decades trying to make that easier for people.
Yeah, well, you've helped a lot of people along the way, both individuals and companies. One of the reasons why we call the program Fingerprints on Success is we love to talk about the impact that mentors have, or people of significance in other people's lives that make a real impact or influence. When you think about your success and entrepreneurial journey, are there some people in that, that history that when you look back, you say, but for them, maybe this wouldn't have gone the way it's gone, and maybe I wouldn't have had this kind of success?
Yeah, there are three that immediately come to mind. I won't take a lot of time with them, but I definitely want to call them out. Because like you say, none of this happened. So the first one is Ron Ernst. Ron Ernst was my English teacher in high school, but also the debate and forensics coach at Kimberly High School. And, I was this, believe it or not, you've met me now, but I was this insecure, scared kid who saw some potential in me and said, hey, you should go out for debate. And I didn't think I could do it. I would have never done it on my own. But he saw something in me early on. And he had debate programs at the high school. They had won several state championships, and some of them have gone to national. So Ron Ernst, for sure. And I got a chance about a year ago to go and thank him 40 years later for that opportunity, which was pretty cool. The second one is Dr. Susan May. Dr. Susan May was the president of Fox Valley Technical College. which is a technical college near my hometown. And she gave me the opportunity when I started teaching human search engines right around the time of the Great Recession. She realized that thousands of salaried people were going to get laid off during this Great Recession with no outplacement. And so she literally hired me to come in and teach my process at the college. So she created a full-time position for me to teach outplacement the way that I had designed it to anybody who wanted it from around the state. And in fact, we had about 3,000 people go through that program with lots of success along the way. And people started coming from Minneapolis and Chicago, and then became picked up by Congress and became this national thing. So her faith in me early on. And then the last one is Reed Ribble. Reed Ribble, that name probably doesn't sound familiar to you, but if you're in Wisconsin, he was the congressman for Northeastern Wisconsin. And he's the one that got my work to Congress. He literally said, when he figured out what I was doing, he said, "Listen, Chris, your book, Human Search Engine, I'm so convinced that you have the answer that the nation needs." And remember, this is like a year and a half after the Great Recession. So job seekers are everywhere. Jobs are super hard to come by.
Yeah.
He said, "Listen, if you'll give me, I can't buy them from you because I'm restricted by Congress from doing that. But if you'll give me 435 copies of your book, Human Search Engine, that teaches this job search process, I will literally write a letter of recommendation, put it in the book, and hand it out to everybody in Congress." And he did exactly that. And that's you know, none of this happens without his input.
Well, that's a remarkable story. That's really incredible. I mean, that I was wondering, you know, I had read about the fact that that had occurred, but I didn't know the story behind how it occurred and how the book kind of became the Bible, you know, literally pushed out by the government. And boy, was that a tough time for everybody, you know, for those people who were working during that time frame. Like you said, you know, jobs were hard to come by, and it was a very tough time. But what a great story that he took that initiative and felt passionately enough to do that.
If I may, I want to add just one anecdote here that I think so it's always people's faith that they see something in you before you see it. So here's the story. I'm teaching this class at the college, this outplacement, right? Job Seekers Network, we called it. And he had heard about it, but he wanted to vet it and make sure before he got behind it and brought it to Congress that it was really what he thought it was, that it was worthwhile and unique and successful. So he took two of his staffers, and without me knowing, I've never met him. I had never met him before that. He sent two of his staffers to the class for a month to just sit in and see what it was. So a month later, I get a call from his office. I literally get a call that says, "The congressman would like to speak with you." And I'm like, "What did I do?" I don't know who he is. I think I've done something wrong. You know, when's the last time you got called in by your congressman? And he said, "Chris, I want you to know, I've sent my staffers to your class. You have something that the nation needs right now. I want to get it out there. And I think you have the answer. And I'd like to get behind your work." So, you know, I went from being completely afraid of going to see my congressman to him actually bringing this out to national and now international as my work moves into Canada and Europe this year. None of this happens again.
Well, that's a great story. And I have to ask you about after 40 years, when you went back to that teacher and were able to say thanks, what was that experience like?
So I got to tell you, that was super cool. So when you're 18 years old, your teacher is, especially a teacher that you have great regard for, is like on this, he's like on a pedestal, right? He's like he's so far above you. When I went back to him, like he kind of had me on this pedestal and saying, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe you took the time to come and see my wife and I. I can't believe you remember us." And I'm like, "You've got to be kidding me. Like I'm here to say thank you. And what do you want? What do you need? Is there anything I can do for you?" Because by this point, he's, let's say, 80 years old. You know, I'm 61 at the time. And so it was this unbelievable reversal. But more importantly, so he cried and I cried. I'll admit that on a national broadcast, I cried with him, that who could ever guess that two people who found each other and he had done this for other people. But I think it's fair to say that my success on the speaking tour is probably the greatest end result of his work. But it was an amazing moment. And he told me, like, this helps me know that the work that I did as a teacher, because being a teacher is a tough gig. Not everybody's a, you know, not everybody's an A student or even, you know, wants to be in the class. But he said this, you know, this is one of those things that made it all worthwhile.
Enjoying the show so far? We've received fantastic feedback since we started, and we love your questions. Entrepreneurs face unique challenges, and as a corporate attorney and CEO, Bill understands that. Whether it's your first location, industry regulations, succession plans, or exit strategies for your business, the journey is rarely a smooth one. Mandelbaum Barrett PC offers listeners of this podcast a 20-minute consultation with their award-winning team. From mergers and acquisitions to litigation, they help entrepreneurs navigate new opportunities, get invaluable insights, and support to not just survive, but thrive. Click the link in the episode description or visit mblawfirm.com for details. Once again, it's mblawfirm.com. Now, back to our show.
I can relate to the story, and because actually this guy doesn't even know it yet, but I had a little league coach when I was in my teens, a baseball coach, who, when I think back on my life, the guy made a huge impact. I mean, really a special, special person. And I actually am reaching out for him like this week, literally as we're recording this, to, you know, to actually have him on as a guest on the show, if he's willing to do it. And a big part of it is just to be able to say thank you, because it was one of those things where, you know, you start reflecting and you start thinking about these people that made a huge impact on you and how, you know, it's life-changing. And, you know, for them to not know that they changed your life is kind of like, it's like a sad missed opportunity, right?
What a wonderful way to honor that person. And more importantly, it completes the circle, right? That's what we're supposed to do. And then we thank that person, and then we take somebody else under our wing, and we pass that information on. So I'm glad you're taking the time. I think you'll find it super rewarding.
Well, you perfectly segued right to my next question, which is now you're a guy who just went through just three huge, important, influential mentors in your life that made a huge difference. What do you do to pay it forward? What are you trying to do to kind of be that for somebody else?
So I do a lot of nonprofit work. I do my work, Winning the War for Talent, where I actually do consulting with companies. I make most of my living now teaching companies. I build a small recruiting team inside their organization with existing people, and then through not only on coaching on site, but also follow-up virtual coaching sessions on Zoom. That's the way I make my living today, in addition to speaking at conferences. But if a nonprofit calls, I go. And I tell my staff, I have three fractional people that kind of schedule my life around the world. And I tell them, if a nonprofit calls, we answer. And so I would say that there, and it's not just places that are important to me, right? If the Girl Scouts call, I go. If Habitat for Humanity calls, I go. And it's not just locally. So, I guess if you're listening and one of your nonprofits that's listening is looking for some help, please feel free to reach out. Because it's the way I can remind myself that it's not about me, that the information, the knowledge is important. And really, the most important thing for me is if I help companies hire better, the secret that I don't really tell a lot of people, but the secret is if I help companies hire better, I'm actually still helping my job seekers, right? My first goal is job seekers. And so if I help any company hire better, I'm actually helping dozens or maybe 100 job seekers end up where they belong. And so let me assure you, if it's a nonprofit and they call, I will answer.
Well, you know what? We actually do quite a bit of work for nonprofits, and I know the leaders of some of those organizations listen. So don't be surprised if you need another fractional person to answer your calls and schedule you. You may have just invited it.
That's okay. We'll put together a group workshop. It would be my great pleasure.
I think that's great. So let's talk about a topic. What's on your mind these days in terms of an important topic that you think entrepreneurs should be thinking about, that they should be concerned about or navigating right now?
I think most of the companies that bring me in because they're having a difficult time recruiting people, right? And the demographics are clear. If your listeners haven't or don't have a clear idea of what's currently happened, we're 8 million people short for the next 10 years. There's no politics. There's no theory. It doesn't matter where you get your news from. There's no ambiguity, and there are no alternative facts involved. We are 8 million people short in the United States as far as the workforce for at least the next 10 years. And so most people call me because they're having trouble recruiting people. But the real issue that's going on today is because there are so many jobs available and it's so easy to find and change jobs, retention is a much bigger issue. And I will tell you that if I'm known for anything around the country, it's this one. When people stop learning, they start leaving. And so what's fascinating about that is we are dealing now with two generations, the last two generations, millennials and Gen Zs. They work on completely different currency. You and I, you're probably younger than I am, but we're in the ballpark together here. But you and I sacrifice time for money a lot, probably in our lives, because jobs were hard to come by. You didn't just leave jobs easily. And so we said, if we have to sacrifice time for money, we're willing to do that for the security that the job will bring. Well, if you look around, whoever's listening to this, think about the number of now hiring signs there are in your community. Why would anybody be afraid to leave their job today and think that they can't find another one? And so this whole idea of retention and when people stop learning, they start leaving, really means that these two generations value freedom and growth almost on the exact same level as money. All right. And so what that means is these two generations are the first two generations that don't know a world without Google. They have had access to the combined knowledge of the history of the world in 15 seconds of their entire lives. And so I always tell people, right, you don't have enough positions to promote everybody. You don't have enough money to outbid everybody. So the only options you have are to provide them growth and freedom, which, by the way, are the two most important things to the millennials and Gen Zs in the first place. So I have I teach all of my clients that I do consulting with to create something called the subject matter expert development model, which allows those employees to drive their own growth and development by identifying a problem that the company currently has, and then using all access to all the information that's out there, not only through Google and YouTube, but all these online learning platforms, so Udemy and Coursera and edX and LinkedIn Learning. Almost any problem that your company has, the answer to it, some other company has figured it out and they very likely put a class online to teach it. Well, why not just ask people that you're looking to promote or develop while you're waiting for an opportunity for them to actually get promoted? Why not ask them to use all the resources of the internet to choose one of these problems that our companies, they're circular problems, right? They happen over and over and over again. We probably should have solved them a long time ago, but we've never had anybody focus their time on it. So I have them give that employee as a way to recognize them and prepare them for the next level of higher level service in the organization. I ask them to choose one of these problems, then use all the sources of the internet and spend 2 hours a week on company time for 6 months and become a subject matter expert on the topic. And then bring it back and use those tools and abilities, teach other people in the organization, and let's use the solutions that other companies have figured out to make that problem go away. And the biggest issue here, Bill, is that most people who run companies, for whatever reason, believe any problem they're dealing with, that they're the only company on the planet dealing with it, which is kind of adorable, right? Because there's 31 million different companies in America. The chances that you're the only one who's had that problem are pretty small. And so when you let go of that, and not only that, you don't have to guide or even drive the growth. The millennials and Gen Zs are learning entities. They want you to give them a project and a problem and then just say, go find ways to solve it. And so you can create a model that not only keeps people growing, gets them ready for their higher level of service, but the cost is almost zero There's really no administrative function involved in it. There's no work for HR, no work for the managers, and you can make the biggest problems in your organization go away.
Yeah, well, I think you're nailing that issue about retention. I thought, you know, one of the things that really I connected with when I saw you speak for 3 hours that time in North Carolina was how you backed up all your theories or your ideas with data. And, you know, because it's one thing to have an opinion, it's another thing to back it up with data. And one of the most striking things that you pointed out that I had never really given any thought to, and probably most entrepreneurs and business owners haven't, was the shortage of actual living human beings for the jobs, right? And that whole, you put a chart up, and I remember seeing it, that showed that the current kind of, I'll call it the current prime working generation, the people that are in their working prime right now, is like the smallest generation we've ever had in terms of number of people.
So it takes three generations to make up a workforce, because each generation is 17 years long, and people are in the workforce about 50 years. So we always have around some number around three generations, sometimes four, but usually three in a workforce. So the generations that we have relied on for the last 40 years had a total of 219 million people in them, all right? Well, the largest generation of that, baby boomers, which maybe you and I are both in, but although you might be younger, so I don't want to put you in that category unless you're there.
Yeah, it's the gray hair, Chris. It's what can I do? It's the gray hair. Full disclosure, I'm 52 as of the other day. So
totally cool, right? So you are definitely Generation Xer. My apologies for that.
Although I'm an X. I just missed the baby boom. I'm an X.
Yeah, gotcha. So anyway, the largest generation in the history of this country, baby boomers, are currently 79% out of the workforce. In 2 years, they're going to be 93% out of the workforce. So you take out 75 million people in the baby boomer generation, and the generation that's replacing them at the bottom, Generation X, only has 67 million people. So we no longer have 219 million people in the available workforce. We have 210.5 million people in the available workforce. We're 8.5 million people short for the next decade. There's no discussion. There's no theory. There's no nothing. It's math. And so there are not enough breathing human beings in America to fill all the open jobs that are being vacated by my generation at a rate of some 12,500 people a day. So you can choose not to take this seriously, but there has to be winners and losers in this war.
Yeah. You know, your point about education being part of retention and personal growth, I think that a lot of happiness for all of us in personal growth is that we want to be in a state of advancing and learning and improving, just as people, as human beings. Like we're in a good place when we're growing and when we're developing. And that really resonated with me. And, you know, I recently started having a series of breakfasts with the employees of my organization, because as we've become a bigger organization, the days of me being able to do the one-on-one lunches with every single person who worked for me, which I love doing, just became a physical impossibility. So now we're having little group meetings, which I enjoy as well. And one of the questions I'm asking is there something that you'd like to learn? Is there something that, you know, a new challenge or something that you would like to have an opportunity to do or learn? Because, you know, I want to make sure that people in the organization have an opportunity for continued growth and learning and development. And, you know, it really resonated with me when you talked about it, because without a doubt, you know, retention is going to be what it's all about. And I think for all of our entrepreneurs listening, you know, there's a lot of great takeaways in the comments you've made, you know, just in the time we've been together so far. And maybe that and the data behind it is probably one of the most profound pieces, because like I said, that to me, you know, lots of people have opinions. God knows I'm around a lot of lawyers all the time. I know there's a lot of opinions, but data doesn't lie. The numbers don't lie. It's math.
So Bill, there's a fascinating thing. If you think about this, I mean, you may choose not to want to develop your people, but I want you to think about this for a second. So there's two things. Number one, There's an old comic around business that says, well, what if we train up our people and they leave? And the other person comes in and says, yeah, but what if we don't train them and they stay? right? So that's the first problem. And the second problem is you've taught your HR people or anybody doing recruiting only invite in people to interview who want to drive, have growth, develop, and have initiative, right? We only let those people in that want to develop and grow. And then you bring those people in and you don't have a way to develop and grow them. And then you're going to ask me why they're leaving in 3.4 years. That the average millennial has changed companies, not jobs, but companies every 3.4 years, not because they wanted to, but because when they stopped learning, they started leaving.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And it's playing itself out in real time, like you said. So let me ask you this, Chris. I said I was going to ask it early on when I said spoiler alert, because you had to mention you mentioned Simon. So you know, at this point of your career, as we talked about a long time ago, you discovered for you, even though you've been successful and made a lot of money, that it wasn't all about money and that there was purposeful work driving you. So now, you know, you're successful, you have a national and now international reputation. What is your why? What keeps Chris Zarnik going? What's got you excited and moving forward, and what makes you tick, Chris?
Well, I think remember, my generation did not have nearly the access to information that generations do. So I'm all into all these learning platforms and figuring out the different ways to develop learning LMSs, right? Learning management systems, and going on LinkedIn and LinkedIn edX and Udemy and Coursera and all these other places. And what I desperately want to tell companies, my why really starts with, I need companies to know that people are not in the job they want, they're in the job they could get. And that talent is literally as close to you as the place that mixed the paint for you at Home Depot part-time, right? You're going to run into people over and over and over again. And if you start seeing them through different eyes, which is, let's not assume that the job people are in are the job they were meant for or best at. Let's make the assumption that the job they're in is just the one they could get given the certain circumstances they were in. And that there are people showing up reliably every day for way worse jobs. And worse, there's no such thing as a bad job, as my dad would say, but I would say worse pay, worse environment, worse culture, working conditions. But there are people every single day. And if I can convince people of two things, that your talent that you complain about, right? We complain about, you see on the news, nobody wants to work and everybody's lazy. And none of that's true, by the way. Let all of that go. Because if all millennials were lazy, then how do you explain the great talented millennials that are currently running your company today? If everybody wants to work virtually, how would we explain the fact that most people want to show up to work? So if I can convince companies of that, and more importantly, that I can convince people that with this number of jobs available, the opportunity to find where you fit and where you can add the most value, not only to the company, but to your own life and to your family's life. Wow. I mean, every single day, I know this is going to sound a little bit corny, but every single day I wake up and realize that 51% of everybody in America, according to the New York Times, is in the wrong type of job. Just think about that for a second. 51% of everybody in America, based on their statistics, say that they're in the wrong job. And I get a chance to fix that. So, you know, someday, 20 years from now, my work will be in the hands of people who can bring it forward to other people. And I get the chance to change maybe tens of thousands of people's lives and maybe thousands of companies' destiny. That's a pretty good why.
Yeah, I would say so. It's a great place for us to maybe call it an interview, so to speak, because I don't know where to go after that. That's profound. And I mean that sincerely. Like, that's really, you know, it's purposeful work and you're doing a great job of it. And Chris, I really want to thank you for taking the time and coming on Fingerprints on Success today. And really, it's been a pleasure to know you, to work with you, and to have you as a guest on our show.
That's very kind. I mean, if people want to know more, they can always go to chriszarnik.com. I have a YouTube channel, and I got to tell you, for a farm kid from Appleton, Wisconsin, this is a pretty big dream. But you will find, if you do any research on my work at all, that my job is to teach you how to fix it once and for all. I'm not a chiropractor. I have no. There's 10 million companies currently dealing with talent issues in America, and there's one of me. So I'm a surgeon. I come in, teach you how to fix it and build a team that can fix it forever, because there's too many people out there that need help and too many job seekers who need to find the right place. So I'm super grateful for the opportunity. And I have to say, before we go, so grateful for your faith and belief in my work. Just after that short 3-hour period of time, I never get to this place without people who believe in me from the very beginning. And I'm grateful for all of that from our first meeting almost a year ago.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for coming on the show today. Take care.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Fingerprints on Success podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on your chosen platform that you are listening to us on. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this episode with them, or post it on your social media to share with your friends. You can catch the show notes for this episode and any mentioned links in the description of this episode. Mandelbaum Barrett PC specializes in partnering with successful business owners and proven entrepreneurs on all of their legal matters. Visit www.mblawfirm.com for more information. Once again, it's www.mblawfirm.com. We'll see you on the next episode.